Okay, good morning, everyone. So we are going to continue through the section on Gan Eden, and we left in middle of the piece of Chazon Yoel last time. So the Chazon Yoel picked up on a line in the Ramban, which, you know, I remember, Toby, you weren't a fan of. You said it didn't make so much sense, and the Chazon Yoel also thought it didn't make so much sense, and that's why we're trying to resolve it. So what was that line that troubled us last time? The Ramban said, he was contrasting those who go to Gan Eden, those who go to Gehenna, those who go, you know, to heaven, I guess, those who go to hell, if you want to translate it that way. Kol echa ve'echa yeshlo shnei chalakim. Each person has two chalakim, two portions. By default, when one is put into this world, he has a portion, one in Gan Eden, one in Gehenna. So here's the thing. If ultimately I go to Gan Eden, what happens to my lot in Gehenna? Is it just free real estate? And if I go to Gehenna, what happens to my real estate in Gan Eden? So Zacha Tzadik, no tel chelko v'chelek chavero. So a righteous person, of a Gan Eden, a righteous person, not only does he get his own real estate in Gan Eden, but he gets the real estate of a wicked person who never got invited into the homeowner society of Gan Eden, right? So he gets the house right next to him as well. This Chayev Rasha, if the Rasha goes to Gehenna, not only does he get the lot of his own that was destined for him in Gehenna, but he also gets the lot of his friend. And we said both of these lines require explanation. Because number one, if somebody, if I perform mitzvos and I earn my spot in Gan Eden, that earns me my spot in Gan Eden. What right do I have to someone else's portion in Gan Eden? That's not right. That's their portion. And likewise, if someone is going to Gehenna, so if they sinned, they should only be held accountable for their own sins. Why are they also being punished twice over for someone else's sins? Both of these are troubling, and both of these require explanation. So last time we answered the first half of the statement. Why a righteous person gets the lot of a wicked person. And we said there's a lesson over here, that a righteous person, when he gets the lot of a wicked person, the reason is because we are all put in this world to rectify the world. God puts us in this world as partners with him to perfect a inherently broken world and to fix it, to perfect it. And when, I'm just going to, there's some background noise. I'm just going to try to mute everyone if possible. Where's there? Oh, everyone is muted already. I don't know where it's coming from. I'll just, okay. There we go. Background noise is gone. So when someone fails to perform their mission in this world, God puts us all with different missions in this world, different things that we are supposed to bring to the world to make it a better world. If Shimon fails to do his part, that means there's extra work for Reuven, right? So, you know, if there's if the you know, the shul needs to raise a certain amount of money, but only, you know, some people, they don't pay the dues, they don't pay, give the donations. So then that means we need to get donations from more money from less people, and that therefore they are basically taking on the chelek of those extra people that didn't want to. You know, like that's just like a rudimentary example, but it makes sense. Or like on a group project, if not everyone in that group puts in an equal amount of effort, what usually happens in, you know, it could be in corporate settings, it could be in a college setting, whatever it might be, it means that someone has to pick up the slack. And when that person picks up the slack of the person who was negligent, the person who was lazy and didn't do his job, then rightfully so, he should get the credit for the extra work he did. It should be commensurate. And that's what it means that a righteous person gets the chelek, gets the portion of the wicked person, because he actually had to make up for the work that the wicked person refused to perform in this world. That's what we said last time, based on the words of the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato. And this idea is also, we mentioned, is echoed in the Sfas Emes, but yes, it's echoed in the Sfas Emes. We didn't see this last time. The Sfas Emes, we're going to get to this soon, actually, right? So we have a year of this Shabbos, and not so long from now, we're going to be up to Parshas Toldos. So you're already getting an early Dvar Torah for Toldos right over here. The Sfas Emes on the Parsha says, the Esav lo zach letakinis atzma lekabel chelka muchanlo. Esav, oh, everything okay, Audrey? You're muted. I can't hear you. I think I can enable you to unmute. Okay, I think I just enabled you. If you wanna, should work now. Okay, well, when you figure it out, feel free to jump in. Okay. Okay, so the Sfas Emes says that Esav did not fulfill his mission in this world. Therefore, he did not receive his chelek. He did not receive his portion. Vasa Yaakov avodasav anato chelko. Yaakov, Jacob, had to perform the mission of Esav that Esav did not fulfill in this world. Lefika shapir amar Yaakov anochi Esav bechorecha. So we always think of Yaakov, even though Yaakov was kind of like this, you know, a very idle, docile person who just dwelled in the tents. He was very kind. There was a moment of dishonesty. A moment of dishonesty where he dressed up. He pretended to be Esav so he could steal the blessings from his father Yitzchak, from Isaac. And many are naturally troubled. How could Yaakov achieve this through lying, through deceit? How could he say, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, I am Esav, your firstborn? He's not Esav. How could he lie like that? Righteous people don't lie. So the answer is, Yaakov wasn't Esav the human being, but he had the chelek of Esav, as Sfas Emes says. The chemesh natal al atma avodah sheyeches mutelas al Esav. What's it mean that he was Esav? That not only was he Yaakov, but he had the chelek, the positive attributes of Esav that Esav should have fulfilled in this world. And therefore, since he fulfilled Esav's mission in this world, he had to pick up the slack that Esav neglected to fulfill. Therefore, he had a right to the blessings. The blessings were intended for Esav if he fulfilled his mission perfecting the world, but he didn't do that. Therefore, Yaakov rightfully claimed to be Esav, not that he was mamash, literally Esav, but that he fulfilled the mission of Esav and therefore was entitled to the blessings that were meant for the person fulfilled that mission in this world. That's what the Sfas Emes says. I mean, at the end of the day, he still lied. It's like a Hasidic Shavart, right? It's like a good, this is literally like a good Shabbos morning sermon. Who knows? Maybe I'll use that for my Dvar Torah and Parshas Toldos. But at the end of the day, Yaakov still didn't tell the truth, and we still need to come to terms with that. There are other answers, but, you know, this is like a good Dvar Torah, but it doesn't exactly answer the question, not to the point at least that I'm satisfied, admittedly. But that's his approach. And that is the explanation of the first statement, that a tzaddik takes the portion of the wicked. But we still need to understand, how is it possible that a wicked person not only gets punished for his own misdeeds, but gets punished for the misdeeds of someone else? That's really not fair. You know, if I steal, punish me for theft. Don't punish me for what someone else committed. So that is the glaring question here. And so the Mishnas Rabbi Aaron, which is, okay, I have a question. You know, this is a fun thing I like to do sometimes. Based on like what kind of Orthodox audience you have, you ask, when I say Rav Aaron, is there like a particular Rav Aaron that comes to mind?
Soloveitchik.
Ah, Soloveitchik. Okay, good. And anyone else? When I say Rav Aaron, who am I referring to? Okay, good. So some would say, if you're in a modern Orthodox setting, you might say Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. But in the more yeshivish world, when you say Rav Aaron, you're referring to Rav Aaron Cutler. So it really depends. You know what? It's also a thing between America and Israel. We call when we say the Rav, we refer to Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik from YU. when we say Harav in Israel, that refers to Rav Kook. So it's all dependent on your sociological, on your culture that you're in, your subculture within Orthodox society. It can be Rav Aaron Lichtenstein also, by the way. That's what some people would say as well, who are, you know, you go into Teaneck, you say Rav Aaron, they might think referring to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, or you say Rav Moshe, then you might be referring to Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, or the general from world thinks you're referring to Rav Moshe Feinstein. There is a slight difference. You say Rav Moshe, but that's a subtlety. Anyway, Rav Aaron Cutler, in Mishnas Rabbi Aaron, he also tries to resolve this. So now he tries to resolve the second issue. Why is the wicked not only responsible for what he did, but what for someone else did? So he gives two answers. Number one, Chada, Shahayalo Mimi Lilamed. Because this wicked person, he didn't sin within the vacuum. If there were righteous people around, right? He grew up in an observant community where everyone's keeping Torah and mitzvos, and he had potential role models to look up to, people who he could seek advice, people who he could look to model his behavior after them, and even still he chose to sin. Ulefika cheto yoser gadol, it makes his sin all the much greater, the unsho yoser gadol, because he had the ability, he had the resources, he knew full well what is the derech hayashar, what is the right way, what God demands of him, and it was, you know, to a certain extent, not even difficult, because that's the culture he grew up in. But then he specifically goes against the tide, and specifically violates the prohibitions of the Torah, that makes his sin all the much greater. But because he was surrounded by, he had tzaddikim, he had people to refer to, people that made the culture just a natural culture of Torah, and he decided not to keep it, it makes his sin all the much greater. That's one approach that Rav Aaron Cutler gives. The second approach, the second answer he gives, V'od b'yir da'i deha bilti zocha nismata madrigas hazocha. U'mase arasha garmu p'gam b'dargis tzak. Not that the wicked person was expected to learn from the righteous person, but because the wicked person, not only did he sin, but he influenced, he impacted someone who would have, you know, imagine, if, for instance, if I talk, let's say, I mean, I guess sort of halavai, this should be an issue again, you know, when shul is so filled that we have this problem. You know, I haven't actually, maybe Akudah Shalom is always like this, by the way. Maybe, you know, there's never talking in shul. Okay, so that's not the case. I was being down the cops close. I tried. But I guess one thing right now we have is that I don't see any challenges with excessive talking during davening, because the people who are going out of their way to show up actually want to daven. But, you know, I guess halavai, that should be an issue once again when we have so many people back, sort of halavai. I don't know how to put that right, but you know what I mean. So when someone talks, if I talk during davening, I'm not only impacting myself. On the one hand, I can say, okay, look, you know, I got bored during davening. I'm talking during shul. That's my problem. No. Because when someone talks during davening, they're distracting the next person from davening, or they're encouraging them. You know, when someone else is talking during davening, then someone else who would have been davening otherwise says, huh, that guy's talking. No one seems to be protesting about that. Maybe I could get away with some schmoozing as well. So then what happens is that when someone sins, unless they're doing it, you know, in their own private room and no one sees, they are impacting those around them. Umase harasha garmu pagam bidargas hatzadik. It brings the tzadik down lower. Valzen nenashu yoser, because he brought the tzadik down. What's it mean? He takes the chalek of the tzadik in Gehenna. He's responsible. He's culpable for causing that tzaddik to lose part of his portion of the world to come by creating a culture, by encouraging him or giving him the idea to sin. So what's it mean that the wicked takes the portion of the righteous in Gehenna. He isn't only punished for inherently for his own sins, because if his own sins cause someone else to sin, that is also a responsibility. He's culpable for that as well. Therefore, he gets punished not just intrinsically for the sin he committed, but if he causes others to sin as well, it's essentially like lifnei iver lo sinte michshol, placing a stumbling block in front of a blind person. It doesn't only literally mean that. That's, of course, ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. If that's what the verse says, you can't do that easier than Meshech Chachma says. But the meaning of that verse is that don't place a sin in front of someone. If someone is on one side of the river and you're on the other side of the river and you have treif meat with you and you put it on his side of the river, he wouldn't have it otherwise. You just facilitated a sin. And that is a sin in and of itself, he says. So according to these opinions, though, he's taking a little bit of a poetic license. Raval Cutler, when he says that you take the chelek, that the Russia takes the chelek of the righteous person in the world to come, in Gehenna, Shirak Niskala Avon HaRusha V'Oncha Mishum Chavir, Alba Einzeh Chelek Chavir B'Gehenna. It's a very loose interpretation, because the wicked person is not really getting the portion of the righteous person in Gehenna. He's just really expanding his own portion. So it's true. What Raval Cutler is saying makes sense, that a wicked person is more culpable because he did not learn from the lessons of the righteous people around him, and he also brought the righteous people down with him. But it doesn't really fit with the words that says that the wicked person gets the portion of the righteous person in the Gehenna. It doesn't answer that question, right? Do we see how it doesn't really fit with the wording? That's the difficulty that still exists. And for that, we have a third teretz. We have a third answer that is not only by... So those two were from Rav Aaron Cutler. The third answer we're going to give is from the Chazon Yoel himself. And this will fit better with the wording. So God will give people specific challenges in this world. The image sorech v'dinei shemaim lahavi ra al eisa adam. Let's say God declared, God proclaimed from heaven that Reuven is supposed to get mugged this day, right? Reuven is supposed to, he's walking down the street. God has in mind he should be mugged at some point, God forbid, while he's walking down the street. So what does God do? So if Reuven is supposed to be mugged while he's walking down the street at 9 o'clock at night, so what he'll do is God will create a scenario where Shimon, who has a chance to do that bad deed to him, is walking down the street at the same time. So Ubasheni Umarialo Vunenash Alze. That's usually what happens. So Esher Onizet Nikro Chelko Shel Chaver Bigahem. So let's say Shimon decides, you know what? Shimon has Bechira, Schafshis, he has free will. He decides, you know what? Maybe I should be an upstanding citizen. I shouldn't riot and loot and mug people. So you know what? I'm going to let this guy walk on his merry way. I'm going to reform. I'm going to be a good person. So then what God has to do is God has to find someone else who might do that as well. Someone else who would be prone to mug Reuven. So then God will put Levi, make sure that Levi is walking down the street at the same time as Reuven. And Levi decides he's short on some change, so he mugs Reuven there. What's happening? What's happening is that Levi takes the chelek of Shimon. Since Shimon, in theory, Shimon was expected to mug Reuven, Shimon overcame his wicked ways. So when Levi performs the wicked deed instead, he is taking the chelek, he is taking the portion of Shimon in Gehenna. Shimon was meant to be put into Gehenna for doing that wicked deed. Shimon overcame that desire. He overcame that wicked inclination. So what happens when Levi does it instead? Levi takes the portion of Shimon in the world in Gehenna which was intended for Shimon. But since Shimon decided to become a righteous person, or I guess just a decent person, Levi takes his portion in Gehenna. That's what the Ramban means. Shari Oin Zahaya Roy Level Lechavero. This punishment, Reuven's meant to be punished in either event. He's meant to be mugged at that point. Avachavero Bachar Batov, but Shimon decided to overcome that inclination. So when Levi performs that wicked deed instead of Shimon, he gets Shimon's portion in Gehenna that Shimon would have had Shimon been the wicked person. And this is like what it says in the Gemara in Gittin. Right. So what happened was when Nero Meromi came Laharchiv his base Hamikdash, Shulchan Nero and Meromi Laharchiv his base Hamikdash, when Nero from Rome was sent to destroy the temple, the second temple. Vomar Latinok, he went over to a child. This is a trope you see in Gemara many times, that since we don't have prophets anymore, prophecy was given to children and to those who are considered a shota. So many times you'll see people will go over to children. They'll say, what pasuk did you learn? Teach me a verse that you learned in school today. And they believed it portended a future event. They believed that it was like a nevuah of sorts, a prophecy. So Nero went to a child that he saw on the street. He said, psuk li psukecha, teach me a verse from the Bible that you learned today. Va'amar lo, and the child said to me, quoted him from Yecheskel, from Ezekiel, v'nesati es nikmasi be'edom v'yad ami Yisrael. And I will place my revenge, my vengeance upon Edom, which refers to the nation of Rome, for what they did to my nation Israel. And because of this, Nero fled. Nero decided, you know what? I'm not going to destroy the temple of the Jews because I know even if I succeed, God will take his vengeance upon me. Therefore, what happened next? V'sholchus aspas yonus. So then the Romans sent Aspasianus, the general Aspasianus, who destroyed the temple. What happened there theologically? When Aspasianus was punished by God later on, he received the punishment which was intended for Nero. But since Nero decided not to destroy the temple, his chelak in Gehenna for that regard became the portion of Aspasianus. So something had to be done. God said the temple has to be destroyed. The Jews have strayed from the ways of God. They deserve to be punished. But just because the temple had to be destroyed, there's still free will for the agitator to decide if he wants to ultimately be the person to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Someone has to destroy it. So God will keep putting people in a scenario where they have a choice to fulfill this wicked deed, a necessary wicked deed in God's orchestration, in God's master plan, but you don't have to be the tool of God to fulfill that wicked deed. So Nero decided, I'm not going to do it. In theory, he had a chelak of Gehenna, he had a portion of Gehenna punishment waiting for him when he did that wicked deed. Since he decided not to do it, when Aspasianus came, Aspasianus destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and killed all the Jewish people. He received that portion in Gehenna that was originally going to be Nero's portion in Gehenna. And that's what it means when we read in the Ramban, when the Ramban says, as we saw on the previous page, Nischayev Rasha, when the wicked becomes, when he becomes culpable, not only is he punished, but there are instances where he gets a punishment which would have been given to someone else, but that person passed the test and he failed the test, and therefore he gets that punishment along with his other deeds that he fulfilled, that he committed in this world. That's what the Chazon Yoel suggests. So three answers in total, just a quick summary. Two from Rav Aaron Cutler, one from the Chazon Yoel himself. Rav Aaron Cutler says, what's it mean that the wicked person gets the portion of the righteous in Gehenna as well? One answer is he should have learned a lesson. He should have taken a hint. Ah, this person's keeping all the mitzvos. This person is very observant. I should do that as well. That's answer number one. Answer number two, not only did I sin, but I brought down the righteous people around me as well. Right? Not only did I talk in shul, but I got someone else to talk with me in shul, to listen to me and talk back and have a conversation. That's number two. Number three is that someone else had a challenge. They passed the challenge. I then get the same test. I didn't pass it. Therefore, I get the portion that was intended for him in Gehenna. Those are the three approaches that the Chazon Yoel cites. Any thoughts or questions? Audrey, I could see that you figured out how to unmute. Yeah. So you've been waiting very patiently over there.
No. I only wanted to mention to you that you were breaking up, and the picture and the telecast just froze. Ooh. So there were parts of it. That was the only thing. I didn't know, but it corrected itself. It happened a few times, but it corrected itself. So it's okay.
Okay. So, Marissa and I were talking about getting a Wi-Fi amplifier in the apartment. So maybe that's what we need to do. Okay. How frequently did it happen, by the way? Was it like once or twice, or that kept consistently?
No, I think it was about two or three.
Two or three.
Yeah, okay. But they were short. I mean, nothing dramatic.
Okay. All right, good. That's good to know. Thank you for letting me know, Audrey. Okay, that's the end of this particular piece. I want to go forward, but were there any questions on the piece that we just learned? Oh, hi, Mister. Welcome. Good to see you. Welcome. All right. I can't see everyone while I'm screen sharing, so I just scroll through to see who else was on. Okay, so let's move on in the Ramban. So the context over here is we're talking about instances in rabbinic literature where we see that someone goes straight to Gan Eden right after they die. The Shanina Ba'avos we see in Pirkei Avos, Mami Tamido Shal Avram Avinu Tamido Shal Bilam Harasha. What's the difference between the, not literally the students, but the people who take after the traits of Avraham Avinu, Abraham our forefather, and those who follow in the ways of the wicked Bilam. Tamida shall Bilam Harasha Yordim Legehenim Shnamar Batal Elokim Toritim Leber Shachas. Tamida shall Avraham Avinu Yorshim Gan Eden Shemar Hachalav Yesho Tzusrei Mamale. The wicked people of like Bilam, they go down straight into Gehenim. They go to Ber Shachas. I just want to highlight that word again because I think Bruce brought up in a previous session what were the different words for Gehenim. So in Tanakh, you'll see Ber Shachas, which is translated as the abyss. So that is another synonym that we use. And then the righteous, God fills up their storage houses. There's a very, I'm not sure if it was this pasuk where it's a similar kind of pasuk that comes up in the end of Makos, comes up in Titus and in other places that God says, I'm going to give you so much rain, so much sustenance that at a certain point, you're going to cry, Yivlu sifso seichem milomar dai. I'm going to give you adbali dai. I'm going to give you so much sustenance, so much blessing, that Yivlu sifso seichem milomar dai, that your lips are going to, they're going to chafe, they're going to wear out from saying, die, enough, Hashem, you're giving us too much. So I almost thought it sounded like a phrase. I'm not getting political, but what does that sound like, Toby? It sounds like you know what I'm about to say.
No. It's just I've heard this is a Hasidic song.
Oh, really? die. Yeah. So, they didn't just make it up like old Jewish music. It comes from a verse somewhere or another because they couldn't come up with their own lyrics, right? So the Gemara and Makos and Titus and other places say that that your lips will get so tired, you're going to say to God, stop giving us, we're tired of getting all this blessing. So it's almost like what America is supposed to have, that we're going to get so tired of winning, that we're going to say enough, we're tired of winning at this point. So that's what the verse sounds like. So I found I found the source in the Gemara for modern day America right over there. A lot, no one else I know picked up on that, but we'll see. If we get four more years, I'll bring that up. If not, then it's irrelevant. So I'll save that for a future door. No, okay, don't worry. All right, just in jest. Misham Shaninu Az Panim LeGehenem Ovosh Panim LeGan Eden. So we say in Pirkei Avos that those who are haughty, those people will go to Gehenem, and those who have humility, they will go to Gan Eden. Ba'amru Kol Mezakis Rabim Ein Chepa Al Yedo. It says in the Gemara in Yoma that anyone who is Mezakis a Rabim, someone who provides for the community, someone who ensures that the community is able to perform mitzvos, has what they need, he does not have any sin that comes by his hand. Someone is faithfully serving the community, God will not bring sin into his hands when he's performing those deeds. Shalehu beGehenem tamida beGan Eden, that he can't be in Gehenem while his students are going to be in Gan Eden. Meaning it's a reason to raise someone out of Gehenem is that how can someone go to Gan Eden if their loved one is in Gehenem? So for that reason, it takes someone out of Gehenem and brings them into Gan Eden. Chalmachti is a rabbin, but someone who leads people astray from the ways of God, Achoti Yomachti is a rabbin, Ein Maspikim Biyodolas is tshuva. He does not have the ability to do tshuva. Now, what does that mean? Doesn't have the ability to tshuva? Wait a minute, right? So Toby, right? Tshuva is one of our big themes that we need to emphasize. Mm-hmm. What's that mean? He's not able to perform tshuva. Anyone can perform tshuva until the day they die. What it means is that God will sometimes go out of his way, as it were, to give people opportunities to perform tshuva. But if someone is so wicked, and not only does he sin, but he deliberately causes other people to sin, God is not going to go out of his way to enable this person to do tshuva. This person is really going to have to make a conscious effort. God's not just going to make opportunities flower out of nowhere for this person. He's very wicked. What God does, this is also at the end of Yom. Well, yeah, this is from the end of Yoma, so that makes sense. At the end of Yoma, so it says that if someone tries to go down the path of mitzvos, God helps them down that path. If someone tries to go down the way of sin, they deliberately want to sin, deliberately leave the way of God. God says, all right, there's the door. You know, go right there. That's your choice. But, of course, for people who sin inadvertently, which I think is the majority of people in this world, that's most of us, we all commit sins inadvertently, not in principle. God gives us opportunities for teshuva. Shalehu beganeinu tamida begehenem. Okay. Well, parak tefilas b'shachar, we find in the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, Tanya gabi shas pitros sharav yochem and zakai. This is a very, by the way, this is a very powerful piece here. This is I tell you all these things that I'm docketing for future drushas. So this is a potentially like a high holiday drusha over here. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is, you know, he was one of the leaders who saved the Jewish people when all was, you know, everything was going down while the second temple was being destroyed. He made sure that we made our way over to Yavne. It was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai really was, I don't know how to emphasize, but if there's someone who you think is going to get into Gan Eden, he's one of those people that make your short list, the people that should be going to Gan Eden. You know, you would have no doubt about that. But when he was coming, when he was on his bed at the end of his life, they found him crying. Sheyabochav Amar L'Tamidav, he cried and he declared to his students, Lo od, Ashiyesh Lefanei Shnei Drachim. He says, I'm very afraid, I'm very frightened, because aside from everything else, I see before me two paths after I depart from this world. Echod Shel Gan Eden, Ve'echod Shel Gehenem. One path leads to Gan Eden, to the Garden of Eden, and one path leads to Gehenem. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, out of all these kind of people, who was Mizakis a Rabbin, who stuck his neck out for the Jewish people to ensure that they could live to see another day, as the temple was about to be destroyed, he was advocating for Jewish people. He saved the continuity of Judaism as we know it. He is sitting in his bed worried. He says, I'm afraid. I don't know. Am I going to go to Gan Eden? Am I going to go to Gehenna? I see two paths in front of me and I don't know which path they are going to bring me down. I honestly do not know. Am I going to Gehenna? Am I going to Gan Eden? I do not know. At that moment, he was genuinely frightened. Am I going to Gehenna? Am I going to Gan Eden? I do not know. And it's telling. That is the mark of someone who is a righteous person. We have this with Yaakov Avinu as well. Yaakov Avinu, our forefather Jacob, when he says, Katonti Mikol HaChasadim, he says, you know what? It's possible that God has saved me so many times in my life. Maybe I'm not deserving of God's presence anymore. Maybe I'm not deserving of God to save me one last time. And the mark of someone who is a genuinely righteous person is that they don't have that certainty that they are going to be rewarded. They don't have that certainty because they are able to be honest with themselves and say, you know, I did a lot of good things in life, but there are also a lot of things that I failed to accomplish with my life as well. And it doesn't mean that they're beating themselves up. It doesn't mean that they're beating up their self-esteem, but it means that they take a good hard look at themselves and they don't just look and say, yeah, you know, I gave tzedakah on that occasion. I showed up to davening that one day. But they also analyze what they could have achieved in this world as well. And they make an honest reckoning. Whereas if I'm sitting down and I feel very comfortable with where I am at, maybe that is an indication I need to do more introspection. Maybe I'm too complacent with where I am in this world, with where I am as a person, with what I'm accomplishing. Maybe I could be doing more. Maybe I could be doing better to perfect the world, and not only to make up for my chelek, but to make up for the chelek of those who aren't able to fulfill their mission in this world. So you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Even he, was at the end of his life, was afraid. He said, there are two paths for me. I don't know where I'm going. That's what he said.
And it's basic humility.
It is. It's just, I wish I could paint the picture better. It's just like such a powerful image of, he's literally sitting on his deathbed. And you would think he would say, you know, I've done all I can in life. I have all these students. I saved the Jewish people from utter annihilation. I've ensured the continuity of God's Torah. You would think someone like that, he has like a very impressive resume. Most accomplished rabbi of his time. You would think like he could sit down at the end of his life and say, I'm satisfied. I've accomplished all there is to do. I've fulfilled my mission. And even he, you know, is in genuine doubt. Even he's in genuine doubt. So, I mean, I don't know. There's something to it that at least struck me as like a very powerful image. But yes, yeah, that would be, you would think, a part of the basic humility of someone of his stature as well. I would agree with that, Toby.
Is it a mitzvah to be humble?
So I think the better question of what you're really asking is there a mitzvah to perfect one's midos in general?
I'm asking, is it a mitzvah to be humble? To always have that feeling of, or is that just...
So I don't think there is a mitzvah, I'll explain to you why I thought you were asking a broader question, because in general, midos are not regulated as mitzvahs. You don't have a mitzvah to be you have verses, you know, Batznei Lechet im Hashem Elokecha, that you should walk with humility with the Lord your God. When I hear the term mitzvah, I think halacha.
Right.
Is that where you're at? Is there like a halacha that says be a humble person?
I mean, it's a mitzvah to love God, right?
Right. So the thing is, when it says a mitzvah to love God, is that like I'm supposed to be in like this emotional state where I'm enraptured by my love of God? Or if you look, this is an argument that I've made I've had disagreements with people in the past. I think halacha is always mandated in the form of action, not in the form of emotion. The goal might be, by the way, to be in this emotional state where you love God or where you love your fellow man. But let's say you look at something like Vahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. It doesn't say, when you look at how the mitzvah is circumscribed, how it's detailed, it's not that you should be, you know, going arm in arm, Vahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, and like be in this happy, jolly mood and feeling love for your fellow man each and every second. That's not what it's saying. It says, it tells us how we should treat other people. The same way you want people to be careful with your property, you should be careful when you're borrowing someone else's property. Because I think there is an imperative, not mitzvah. There's a religious imperative to work on our midos, but ultimately, you know, different people, to a certain degree, our emotions are based on our personalities. And our personalities, we could change a little bit, but there's always an inherent nature to who we are. Some people are more joyful. Some people feel more, I'll use the term loosely, spiritually connected. Some people are not built that way. Some people are more stoic. Some people are more cerebral. And that's just, I think, the natural way. Each person is unique and built like that. Now, we could work on midos, but I think the Torah doesn't say, you know, it doesn't expect us to be in a state of loving God each and every second, because that's just not a normal way to function. Rather, it gives us mitzvos of how to love God. So what's it mean to love God? It means giving up your money for God when you need to, making sacrifices for God. Rabbi Akiva's martyrdom. When Rabbi Akiva dies, he says, I fulfilled all the mitzvos in the Torah, but I haven't been able to fulfill giving over my life for God, which we learn from the mitzvah of loving God. So
yeah, I think it goes beyond that. I mean, I think Sefer HaChinuch includes loving God as one of the mitzvahs.
It does.
But because I think if you, let's say you're a person who does absolutely everything right, you follow every, you do 612. You do everything right. But if in your heart you don't love God, let's say you, God forbid, you hate God because of things he's, you know, that have happened in your life or whatever. But you know, whatever, you're still doing everything right. I don't know. Aren't you missing one then?
So I'll tell you, based on, there's a diak in the Rambam. The Rambam says that, so there's a mitzvah to have simcha, right? That we should serve God with simcha, with joy, with happiness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's say, like your question, let's say I don't love God. Let's say I don't feel joy of it. So the Rambam says, kol hamonea, anyone who has simcha, but then tries to, for whatever reason, destroy and eliminate that feeling of simcha from within them, they are culpable. But he doesn't.
They are what? What did you just say?
They're culpable. They're held responsible for that. Mm-hmm. Because if I have that built-in emotion, or if I've achieved that, then to get rid of it is something that God will hold me responsible for. But if someone's personality is just, you know, they do the mitzvos, they try to connect to God, and ultimately they don't get this, you know, fuzzy feeling when they think about Hashem, whatever, however you want to describe it. You know, I don't mean to be condescending that way. I mean, if you don't feel that connection to God, then you know, based on what I have read, which I could be wrong, you know, I'm not a big theologian or anything. I would say they're not held accountable for that. I would say that's not expected of them.
Okay.
There is a general idea to work on our midos, but one needs to ask the question of why they're not regulated in halacha. And I think that's because halacha regulates our actions. It doesn't regulate our emotions. We can work on our emotions to be in line with what God wants, and that is an imperative, but it's not halachic, because halacha regulates, for the most part, our actions. It will regulate our thoughts as well. For instance, mitzvos srichos kavana. I need to have kavana when I do something. But that's different than an emotional feeling. Having kavana is, I'm conscious that when I sit in a sukkah, I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkahs. But it doesn't mean that I could all of a sudden just, you know, feel the simcha that I'm in a sukkah. That's, to a certain extent, a little bit out of one's control, I would think. But many have argued on me on this, and I could be wrong, and I'll just put that one out there.
Thank you.
Okay. We always get the best discussions right at the end, I realize.
Right.
Okay, wonderful. So we're at 10:23, so we should wrap up. It's good seeing all of you guys. Thank you all for joining. And I'll start brainstorming different ideas, a sfarim that we can learn afterwards. It could be something like L'Reach HaKamocha, Chavetz Chaim, something like halachos of interpersonal relationships, but not just, you know, like Musar Vartz, but more, something a little bit more, I guess, you know, substantive, I would say. Does that make sense?
Halacha-oriented.
Halacha-oriented, yes. Thank you, Toby. All right, wonderful. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.